Get in touch with technology with Tech Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Brought to you by Visa. We all have things we like to think about. Online fraud shouldn't be one of them, because with every purchase, Visa prevents, detects, and resolves online fraud. Safe, secure, Visa.
Hi, welcome to the podcast. My name's Chris Paulette. I'm an editor here at How Stuff Works, and today with me I have Jonathan Strickland, one of our writers.
Howdy!
It's a good day to play a game.
Yeah, it's kind of cloudy outside. We're dealing with the remnants of a hurricane in Georgia, so it's a good time to just relax on the couch and plop a game in the old Xbox 360 and just take it for a whirl.
Yeah, our gigantic editorial gaming room with every system that you could possibly imagine and gigantic screens to play them on.
Right, the chair suspended from the ceiling and nice little harnesses. It's awesome.
Yeah, exists only in our imaginations.
Right, we don't have one of those.
Right. But we were talking about game developers and how cool it is that that some of the smaller developers are starting to get a foothold in the market again.
Right, in the console market specifically.
Right.
Because they've always kind of been around in the PC market. And the internet has really opened up the opportunities for people who are developing games for computers, whether it's web-based or whether it's something, you know, you download from a site. But video game consoles, for a long time, really didn't have that many independent developers producing games for them. And there's a few reasons for that. Well, first, let's kind of look at the recent past and how video games were developed. You have these enormous video game software corporations, and many of them have entire departments dedicated to produce just a single game. And some of the games cost millions and millions of dollars to produce. There were reports that Grand Theft Auto 4 cost like $100 million to produce, which is, you know, you're talking about a Hollywood movie at that point. That's kind of a huge number. I mean, there's no kind of to it. And these games are so complex and so resource heavy that they require large groups of people working together to produce them. You can't have just one or two people working to create a game of that size. And
case in point, I mean, take Two Interactive, the company that produces Grand Theft Auto at the point of this podcast, as we talk now, at time of press.
Right.
They are in discussions with Electronic Arts to work out some kind of combination. You know, obviously they're going to, if they decide to merge or agree to be bought out, however they structure it, they're doing so because of the cost of the resources that EA would be able to give them to produce additional games in the future.
Right. Yeah. And now this isn't the way things always were. Back in the day, a day that Chris and I could actually remember, video games were simple enough where it was entirely possible for a person or a small group of people to produce a game from start to finish and put it on the market and make money. And like in the good old Atari 2600 days.
Oh, well, we're not even, you know, a lot of the people, I've read several interviews in gaming magazines that said that a lot of these guys who are producing these high-tech, super amazing, immersive gaming interactions, they all started programming on their VIC-20s and Commodore 64s with the code that they used to put in the back of some of the magazines then, the computing magazines.
Right.
And, you know, it used to be where you would find, you know, the local kid in your school, and he had written this game, you know, after school, and they would distribute it at on floppy disks with a bag with a little instructions.
Right, yeah.
You know, for, I don't know, what, $5 or something like that. And even big, quote-unquote, big developers would do the same kinds of things. You could write off and have them mail you the game.
Right, yeah. Actually,
a big floppy disk. You know?
A guy I know did exactly that. Richard Garriott.
Was he any good at it?
He met some success. Richard Garriott, or Richard Lord British Garriott, as he's often called, produced the Ultima gaming series and then went on to do many other things. He's trying to go off into space right now, as I understand. But the Ultima series really was incredibly popular, and that was one of those series that was born out of a single person working on a game, just something that he thought was interesting. He was inspired by the Dungeons and Dragons paper and pencil game, and worked out of his parents' garage and with his brother, and formed Origin Game Systems, and the rest is history. So, but that was back when it was possible for a person or a couple of people to create a game. And then what happened was, with the console system in particular, Atari 2600, the market became flooded with lots and lots of terrible games. And I mean horrible, almost unplayable games.
I've got many of them in my basement if you want to try them.
I have played several of them. I can admit right now, I am one of the people who did own the Atari 2600 ET game.
Oh, no.
Widely considered to be the worst video game of all time. I can tell you that it's pretty bad, but you know what? I had a Raiders of the Lost Ark game that I think might tie for as horrible as the ET game was.
You know, but, we're off Steven Spielberg's Twitter list now.
Right. Sorry, Mr. Spielberg. But at any rate, all these games flooded the market, and it caused the market to crash. People got fed up. There was no way to tell if you were going to buy something that was of any quality or not, and people kind of moved to the computer systems, and they got away from the console systems. It wasn't really until Nintendo came on the scene that the console system kind of had a renaissance, if you will. And part of the reason was that Nintendo was almost draconian in what could come onto its system. They had very specific guidelines and quality control. So you didn't have the glut of really horrible games on the Nintendo system like you did with the Atari system. I'm not saying that every Nintendo game was great, but there was a much better ratio of good games to crappy games on the Nintendo system.
And it's actually continuing on like that today. If you look at games for the Wii, you'll see the official Nintendo seal on the right outside of the box that tells you that it is, in fact, licensed by Nintendo.
Right. Now this is bringing us up to current day. Now, current day, you know, we get past the point where you have all these huge video game systems that are spending millions of dollars and really kind of monopolizing the market in a way, away from the third-party developers, or the independent developers, rather. Well, now we've got a couple of game companies, game system companies, Nintendo and Xbox, that are allowing people to create their own games and even sell them across their internet-based services. So with Nintendo, it's called WiiWare, and with Xbox, it's the XNA Creators Club. But these allow people to create their own games, whether it's, you know, one person or a small group or whatever, and upload it. It gets peer reviewed. They can be set out on the marketplace, and people can actually buy these games. You can make money doing it, and it takes a lot of the expenses out of producing a game out of the equation. You don't have to worry about distribution anymore because it's all over the internet, so you don't have to produce the hard copy and the box and the documentation. All of that can be done electronically.
You just have to convince them to carry the title in their store.
Right. Yeah. That's still a big step. It's a bigger step with Nintendo than it is with Microsoft.
Like
Nintendo,
it's the quality control thing.
Right. Exactly. Right. It's that same thing we were talking about with the consoles early on. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. They have a developer's kit that you can purchase for $2,000, and will cause certain people to say, you know what, I'm just not even going to bother. And that cuts out a lot of the crappy games right there. The people who are just curious, because no one's going to drop $2,000 just to find out if they can do it, right?
Yeah, that's a bit rich for my blood.
Yeah, I wouldn't be able to. Yeah, I'm done too. But that you also have to become a licensed developer with Nintendo in order to offer your games on their system. Otherwise, they won't carry it. So there is some quality control there. Now, once you're licensed, you could create whatever games you like, and they'll carry it based on the ESRB rating. So, which is, of course, the rating system that tells you whether or not, you know, what age level the game is appropriate for. So they're not as draconian as they used to be, but it's still a pretty tight grip. Xbox is a little more loose. They you have to have a a premium account with the XNA Creators Club, which costs about $100 a year. So it's a subscription-based thing. And then you get access to their developer's kit. Everything is programmed in Visual C Sharp. And you use that to create the games. You upload them, and the community kind of peer reviews it. And if it passes muster, it can hit Xbox Live Marketplace, and people start downloading it.
Well, that's pretty amazing. You know, I was reading actually the other day, and we're not just talking about completely about consoles. There are other consoles that you may not think of as consoles that would be affected by this. I was reading a report in Macworld. You know, people are, if you go to the App Store on your iPhone or iPod Touch or in iTunes, you can poke around in there, even if you don't have one of these devices. There are independent developers developing games for the iPhone and the iPod Touch. And there was an article on August 25th in Macworld called A Tale of Two Tetrises. And an independent developer named Noah Witherspoon developed a game called Triss. And it's basically, it's very similar to, let's just say it's really, really similar to Tetris, to the point where the Tetris company actually has threatened him with legal action. And he has removed the game from the iTunes store. But, you know, even on that level, you know, we're not just talking about, you know, the PlayStations and the Xboxes of the world. I mean, there are people who develop games for these other systems. And if you wonder why people might actually want to do this, it may not necessarily be to get an extra, you know, $20 for 15 people to download it. The more people do this, the better they get at it. So some of these independent developers of today are going to be the people like Take-Two or,
right,
you know,
right,
or the Square Enix of tomorrow.
They could be the next big video game manufacturer. And some of them actually come from that background already, but sure, they got out of it for one reason or another. And now they're making the games they always wanted to make. Because that's the other side of the coin of the big manufacturers versus the independent guys. A lot of the big video game companies, they're going to concentrate on games that have a proven track record. So like first-person shooters and real-time strategy and resource management games, things that people know there's a market for. Whereas your independent gamers, they're more likely to experiment and really try some really bizarre new things that no sane video game company would pour money into. And it may turn out to be the next big hit.
Sure.
You never know. I mean, Jonathan Blow with Braid is a good example.
Yeah.
That's the current golden child of the independent developer community. You could even argue that it's not that innovative. A lot of people have compared it as a sort of a mixture of Mario and Prince of Persia, because you have a time management thing where you can rewind time and. But even so, it's something that probably no major video game company would have poured resources into, and now it's on Xbox Live, and you can download it for like $15.
Yeah, that's going to be a big opportunity for some people to get their feet in the door, especially considering I read an article in Ars Technica. It was basically covering a report in Screen Digest talking about how games are 50% more expensive to make for this current generation of consoles than it was for the previous generation. So we may be seeing the end of the middle class developer, if you will. You may see the big names who can afford to do it, and the little guys who are willing to take a chance and do something to get their foot in the door, you know, to get their name out there until they get picked up and become a big developer.
Right. Well, the cool thing is, I think no matter which way you slice it, it's a really good time to be a gamer.
We all have things to think about, like, say, what's the best site to buy a new leather jacket, or whether to buy the 3 or 6 megapixel camera. But thankfully, we don't need to think about online fraud, because for every purchase you make, Visa keeps an eye out for fraud, with real-time fraud monitoring, and by making sure you're not liable for any unauthorized purchases. How's that for peace of mind? Safe, secure, Visa.
So for my fellow gamers out there, game on. I mean, it's pretty exciting. And if you guys want to learn more about these kind of topics, you can read our articles on how the Xbox 360 works, or how the PlayStation 3 works, or how the Nintendo Wii works. All of them can be found at HowStuffWorks.com.
Let us know what you think. Send an email to podcast@HowStuffWorks.com.